Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are glad that you are with us. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in just a bit, Running for Remembrance. Prairie Beat looks at the 1015 Project, a new statewide relay that aims to bring awareness to pregnancy and infant loss, a reality affecting 1 in 4 pregnancies. And we'll preview the North Dakota Barbecue Championship on our newest edition of Prairie Plates. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and each year, National Nurses Week is observed from May 6th through May 12th, a time to recognize the skill, compassion, and commitment of nurses across the country and here in North Dakota. And here in our state, one organization is extending that recognition to the very end of life. The North Dakota Nurse Honor Guard provides a brief but powerful ceremonial tribute for nurses at the time of their passing, offering families a moment to reflect of a life of service, care, and calling. Renda Hansen is the founder of the North Dakota Nurse Honor Guard, and she joins us to talk about how this work began and why it's resonating so deeply with families across the state. Renda, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you for having me.
What led, Renda, you to create North Dakota Nurse Honor Guard here?
In February of 2024, I was looking into having a ceremony for a coworker that had passed away, and I realized that we did not have a Nurse Honor Guard in North Dakota. So a friend and I, Lisa at home, decided to make that happen. So it took us about 7 or 8 months. In November, the end of November, we got one up and running, and we started having ceremonies the following year in February. February the 1st was our first ceremony.
Walk us through the ceremony itself. What would a family see and experience during a Nurses Honor Guard ceremony?
What we do is it's a group of volunteers. We are all volunteers. It is a nonprofit. And what we do is dress in the traditional white uniform along with the cape and the nursing cap. And we proceed into the funeral either with the coffin, or we can wait until or be seated before, whatever the family desires. At that time, we start the ceremony and we do an opening statement, and we light the nursing lamp, which is a traditional looking nursing lamp. It is a replica, and that signifies the beginning of a nurse's journey in nursing. And then we would have the She Was There poem. We would do the reading of the Nightingale Pledge, a reading of a Nightingale Prayer. We present a white rose, and that is to honor the nurse's remembrance for the family. And then we do a final call of duty, which is very moving. What we do at that time is we page the nurse 3 times, have a bell ringing, and when she or he does not respond, then we go into where we relieve them of their duty. Mm. We extinguish the lamp, and then we present the rose and the lamp to the family members.
There are several very symbolic moments. You talked about the Nightingale tribute, the white rose, and the lamp. Explain what each of those represents, if you would, starting with the Nightingale tribute.
Okay. So the Nightingale tribute is basically the pledge, the white rose, and the final call of duty. That's the basic. That's what we want every ceremony to entail. And then we can add on the other components if the family wishes. Most families have wanted the entire ceremony, so they would, it lasts about 6 to 10 minutes. But the Nightingale Pledge is something that we all do when we take on nursing as a career. And then the Nightingale Prayer is just a prayer inspired by the life of Florence Nightingale, of course, the modern nurse.
What does the white rose symbolize?
Yeah, so the white rose symbolizes the purity and the dedication of the nurse. So it is in remembrance of that nurse's dedication. And then the lamp is what we use. It's something that Florence Nightingale would have used when she was serving as a nurse during the war. So we have that. Years ago, we used to get one of those when we graduated from nursing school. They no longer do that, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But that is what the lamp is for.
And the triangle seems very powerful to me, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It's some nurse honor guards use different things like a singing bowl, but we chose the triangle just because it is such a beautiful sound when you use it. So it's kind of like what we do. I can tell you, in fact, I'll just go through it if that's okay.
Sure.
What I would do is say, page and nurse, I'll just use my name, Rinda. And we pause and there's a bell ring. Page and nurse, Rinda. And there's a pause and a bell ring. Page and nurse, Rinda. And there's a pause and a bell ring. And, of course, I don't show up because I'm no longer able to. And then it is said, you have faithfully served our profession, your patients and their family members with dignity, compassion, and integrity. You are now relieved of your earthly duties. Your nurse brothers and sisters will take it from here.
Yeah, relieved of duties. What is that? That's so meaningful. What does that mean to you?
That means that although I am no longer, because when I took the calling of a nurse, I pledged to take care of people as long as I could. And I am no longer able to do that. But isn't it a great relief that somebody else is picking up where I'm leaving off? It is also very moving for the family. It actually gives them closing. I've had a lot of family members tell me that it gives them closing and gives them some sort of peace to know that their loved ones have been honored this way.
How do families learn about this incredible service that you provide?
Well, a lot of it lately has been word of mouth. We do encourage the funeral homes to tell the families about it. It is free of charge to families. So, you know, that's something that I really want to stress. This is free of charge. We do not charge the families. It's our honor to be able to do this for families.
I'm sure.
So word of mouth and advertising. During events like the Alzheimer's Association, we were actually able to do the opening event for them a couple of years ago, and that was a great honor. But it also helped get the word out as well.
I'm sure that you've seen how families react and then reflect on their loved one's career. Give us a sense of that reflection for people that may have not understood what it had meant for maybe their aunt or their uncle or their grandparent who was a nurse.
Yeah, so, you know, nursing is about sacrifice. We sacrifice a lot for our career and for the people that we take care of. We give up holidays a lot of times. We don't have the 9-to-5 job a lot of times that many people do. So we're working holidays, we're working long hours. Sometimes we don't always get to spend it with our families like others would. And so just bringing that to light and seeing the sisterhood and brotherhood, the family that is associated with nursing is incredible. So having family members see that they were supported in their career, too, by their coworkers is a great thing.
Enjoying my conversation with Rinda Hansen. She's the founder of the North Dakota Nurse Honor Guard, and she's joining us today to talk about how this work began and how it resonates so deeply with families across the state. Rinda, when you think about people outside of the profession who may not fully understand what it has meant to have been a nurse for a lifetime, what do you want them to know?
I want them to know that, you know, even if you are not a nurse, you have been touched by a nurse in some way. And that may include a family member that has been a nurse or even just you as a patient. And that we should respect nurses and honor them as best we can because they do dedicate their lives to caring for others.
Are retired nurses helpful to the role that you want to continue contributing?
Absolutely. I actually work full time, but I volunteer as much as possible. But we have retired nurses, and many of them tell me that this is a way that they can give back to their community and still feel useful, even though they are retired. So absolutely, the volunteers we have are retired and active nurses.
Are you able to cover the entire state, Renda?
We do. When we first started, we were the only nurse honor guard in North Dakota. So we have been all over the state. But we actually help others create a chapter, too. We have a couple that have started in Ashley and Jamestown and Grand Forks. Williston has a chapter as well. And I am the state coordinator for North Dakota with the Nurse Honor Guard Coalition. So if anybody has any questions about starting a chapter or just wants more information, they can contact me.
How can they do that?
They can call me at 701-498-2577 or look us up on the Facebook North Dakota Nurse Honor Guard page, or they can email ndnursehonorguard@gmail.com.
And is that the best ways to, Renda, for families to request your service?
Absolutely. All they have to do is call or text. This is my cell phone number, so if I don't answer, please give me a minute to call back because if I'm with patients, then of course I'm taking care of that. But yes, text, call, email, send a carrier pigeon, however they want to do it.
With Nurses Week approaching, as we kind of wrap up our conversation, what do you hope people take away from this work about how you honor nurses, not just during their careers, but even at the end of life?
You know, at end of life, and even before the actual death, before the funeral, we can also do tributes, live-in tributes. So those are available to give to someone that is retired and just wants to be recognized, and we can certainly do that. The wording to the ceremonies are a little bit different, but it's still a great honor, and we would be glad to do those as well.
That's Renda Hansen. She's the founder of the North Dakota Nurse Honor Guard. Through a simple and relatively short ceremony marked by tradition, symbolism, and respect, the Honor Guard offers a final tribute to a life spent caring for others. From the white rose to the nightingale lamp, each element reflects the dignity of the profession and the lasting impact nurses have on people, communities, and all of us who they serve every day, 365 days a year. More information about the North Dakota Nurse Honor Guard, including how to request a ceremony or get involved, is available online. Look at their Facebook page as a starter. Renda, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on Main Street.
Thank you.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. If you had a stadium full of people who asked everyone to raise their hand who experienced a pregnancy loss, you might be surprised at how many would go up. Then again, maybe not. That kind of tragedy often stays silent. But an event this fall hopes to bring light and much-needed support to North Dakotans who have gone through this with their family.
Hey, I'm Eric Etheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We are back again with another episode of Prairie Beat.
If you are new to this, it's our weekly news podcast from us here at Prairie Public. Danielle, what is in the news this week?
Well, I went to a news conference yesterday about something I think is actually really cool and will probably become a yearly news story for us here in North Dakota about a pretty heavy topic, actually, pregnancy and infant loss.
Yeah, sounds like a pretty somber topic, a heavy one at that. I know I experienced some of that in my lifetime.
So before we get underway here, one quick fact about pregnancy and infant loss. 1 in 4 pregnancies, that's not just 1 in 4 women, it's 1 in 4 actual pregnancies will end in a loss. And, you know, when you zoom out from that, like you alluded to just a little bit ago, that ends up being a lot of people who go through that, from early to later term miscarriages to stillbirths and even infant deaths. And I'm not going to get too personal today, but I will say, of course, you know, I am a mom of 2. I myself have not personally experienced that kind of loss. But when I sat down for just a few minutes this morning and thought about, you know, the women and families in my personal life circles, I stopped counting at 12 losses that I personally know about, just off the top of my head. And I know there are more if I kept thinking about it. So all of us walking around, you know, even if we haven't been there ourselves, we know a lot of people who have. And this new annual event starting up later this year will be working to not only raise awareness, but also support around this issue. This is Michael Greenwood.
The 1015 Project is a fundraising relay taking place each October to honor pregnancy and infant loss across North Dakota, 1 mile, one story, and one community at a time.
Michael Greenwood is an MD at Vance Thompson Vision in West Fargo, where the news conference took place, and he's one of the founders of this new 1015 Project.
Okay, well, that is very, very cool. A statewide relay. So I'm assuming that means runners, right?
Yes. So that's one of the other things that really attracted me to this story. I'm not just a mom, but I'm also a distance runner. Becoming a mom has actually thrown a little bit of a wrench into how much running I'm able to get up to these days. But I do still like to log a few miles each week. This annual relay, the first of which will take place this October, will feature 12 runners who have applied for this event and represent personal connections with loss or passion for the issue. And they will be starting in Medora, ending in Fargo, and each runner will run 10 miles a day, one at a time, handing off a baton to the next runner. That's kind of how relays work. So here's Michael Greenwood again.
It's kind of this caravan of people, you know, migrating slowly across the state and doing it. But yeah, the interesting part will be you can train to run, you know, 10 miles, and you can train to do it 4 days in a row. But the emotional part and the mental part and the other things that we're doing, I think, will be the real challenge for people. And it also adds to the allure. And we know it's North Dakota, so we're not quite sure what the weather we're going to get. But again, that adds to the story and the struggle and the meaning.
Yeah, so October could be hot and sunny. It could be a blizzard. Okay, so that's 12 runners running 10 miles at a time between Medora and Fargo. I fully expect to see a Teddy Roosevelt impersonator running from Medora for that part of the relay. Mm-hmm. So how many total miles is that? My legs are just throbbing thinking about that.
So it's 480 miles. They're starting on October 15th and ending on the 18th. The 1015 Project will be benefiting an organization called Haven, which began as a way to support families experiencing pregnancy and infant loss. And when I went to the announcement of this event, there were a number of speakers who got up to talk about their support of the event, but also their personal connections, too.
My wife and I have lost two daughters, Jules and Lenny, and so this project is very special to us.
My wife and I experienced this 38 years ago, and we lost an infant son. And Tommy would have been 38 years old this year.
In 2017, my infant son Henry passed away unexpectedly, and it threw me into a place of isolation, even with family and friends support, that I couldn't imagine, and I have difficulty now even putting into words.
My family has experienced loss as well, and so this is an incredible organization and an incredible event, and I'm proud to be here.
So that was Michael Greenwood again, followed by West Fargo Mayor Bernie Dardis, founder of Haven, Jen Burgard, and Fargo's Deputy Mayor, Denise Kolpak.
Well, it's nice to hear about lots of communities and community leaders getting involved in this issue, but also really demonstrating the human faces and connections to those numbers that we talked about a bit ago. As you said, I mean, we are bound to know a lot of people who have experienced pregnancy loss and the things that you mentioned. It's just horrible to go through. I know that personally in our family, but there are just a lot of people that also have experienced the same thing. One in four pregnancies ending in loss translates to literally thousands of families all over the state, throughout our communities, who have direct experience with that kind of tragedy. So who are the runners?
They represent various businesses and entities around the community. And as I said before, they applied to run in this event. Michael Greenwood said they each have personal connections or passion for raising awareness around this kind of loss.
So this relay coming up in October will raise support and awareness for this cause. Danielle, talk a little more about how they will be doing that.
So if you go to their website, the1015project.org, there are ways to get involved. You can either volunteer in one of the communities they'll be running through, or you can volunteer to sponsor. I asked Michael Greenwood about this, too.
And so the whole purpose of this is pregnancy and infant loss is really common, but people don't talk about it. And the reason people don't talk about it is it's obviously deeply personal, but it's really uncomfortable. People like talking about happy stuff. This isn't, you know, something that's happy. And a lot of times it's unexpected. And because of those two things, people just aren't aware of the resources and awareness that's there. And as, you know, someone who's went through it before, it just helps to know that you're not alone.
And again, this run will be benefiting Haven, which supports families navigating loss. And they'll be doing this relay run on an annual basis as well. Greenwood says they will chart different routes around the state and cover different areas. And they're calling it the 1015 Project and holding it beginning on October 15th because October 15th is Infant Loss and Pregnancy Awareness Day.
Very cool, Danielle. That makes a ton of sense. Something I think we can all look forward to for sure later this year. And just one other random question I have for you. I feel like races and relays, running in general, is associated with a lot of causes, awareness, fundraising for certain things. Why is that?
So I was not a runner when I was growing up. I started after college. And I know for me personally, running was sort of this mental mountain I figured out how to climb. It's very personal, psychological journey, more so than physical for me, I think. And once I really unlocked that belief in myself that I could run a mile or two or three without stopping and keep going, it really became about continuing that journey and testing my endurance and my belief and strength. And so when I think about 10 miles a day for 4 days, I think, you know, I could probably personally train to do that. But like Michael said, it's also about carrying that cause and that struggle with you as you run. So it's all about that. It's about the struggle, the endurance, and the strength it takes. So I'll be watching this story later this year as a news person, but also, you know, as a mom and as a runner, too. It's just a cool story.
Now, you've been a Fargo Marathon runner for an avid one for a long time. You took a little bit of a break, or you're going to get back into that a little bit?
I really want to. I considered getting back into the 10K this year, but I haven't trained that much, so we're not going this year.
Okay, so you took up running. Why not jogging versus running? What's the difference?
Oh, there is no difference.
No, not even for your knees?
No.
Well, I thought jogging is worse for your knees.
You can call it whatever you want.
It's running, jogging, it's same all the thing. Same. It's getting off your duff and doing something, mm-hmm. and in this case, something for a very, very good cause.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Thanks for letting us into your world of running, Danielle, and about this very important event in October. Okay, so what else is happening this week in the Z Newsroom?
You know, we're super excited about what tourism might see in terms of visitation for 2026. Obviously, with America's 250th, the opening of the Presidential Library.
North Dakota tourism officials think this summer will be a good time to travel to and in the state.
So graduating from our program means you are trained and you bid for a job in the air traffic control system.
UND Aerospace says there is a need for more air traffic controllers, but there is also growing interest in the field. And a man is facing felony charges after walking onto the state capitol grounds in Bismarck with a pistol. He was safely detained after a few hours negotiating with local law enforcement.
Yeah, luckily that one turned out okay there. It was a scary while it was going on. And UND, they have a way to get budding air traffic controllers around having to go to Oklahoma City and do the required FAA training. They could do it in-house. So hopefully that will help in the shortage pipeline that we all have seemed to be experiencing if you've been doing any flying or paying attention to it lately.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so thanks for all that, Danielle.
You bet. Be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more news or check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, that'll do it this week for us on Prairie Beat. I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
That's our regional news podcast, Prairie Beat. You can subscribe to it wherever you get your favorites, and you can also listen online to new episodes every Wednesday at prairiepublic.org. Still ahead on Main Street, Prairie Plates heads to the grill and previews the upcoming North Dakota Barbecue Championship. With 70-plus teams, kids competitions, and crowd-favorite pulled pork, this free Fargo event is a regional food highlight. And that'll be next here on Main Street, right after this news.
This is another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street, served weekly, and I've renamed the Prairie Public Radio Studios the Prairie Public Foodio.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Well, we have an endorsement today from Ashley Waite, who is with Shields Home and Hardware on 13th Avenue South in Fargo. And we're having Ashley in today to talk about the 15th annual North Dakota Barbecue Championship and Grill Fest, May 1st and 2nd. And May 1st is my birthday.
Oh.
So I might have to.
That'd be a good birthday.
It's going to be, because I'll be over at your event checking things out and maybe sampling a few things.
Yeah, we brought some samples today too. So.
Yeah, these beans are very, very good.
Yeah.
Little sweet, little smoky, little
salty.
Little
garlic, yeah.
I did taste some garlic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us more about the upcoming barbecue championship. It sold out fast, right?
Yes. Yeah, so there's kind of two parts to it. The North Dakota Barbecue Championship. So we have 74 teams from all over the U.S. and Canada coming to compete. And so they cook meat, turn it into certified judges, and then they win prizes, cash prizes. Then the second part of that, we want to get the community involved and inspire them to, you know, promote the sport of barbecue or to just even grill at home. And so we have a grill fest on Saturday from 11 to 4 where we have vendors, all the barbecue experts, grilling demos, free samples, things like that.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. And to me, the difference between grilling and barbecue, and I like both, but grilling would be like a hot fire and then barbecue would be more like low and slow. Would you?
Technically not anymore. Like some of the barbecue guys are hot and fast. So they can do a brisket in, you know, 6 hours. So a lot of them, I mean, low and slow is a very safe way to go. Like if you're starting out at home in smoking and trying meats, it's a safe way. But the competitors have it dialed in. They can start a brisket, you know, at 3 a.m. and have it done and ready. So,
and brisket is not easy. It's very kind of fickle. And I think for me, like the low and slow method works the best because I just kind of have to stick to my guns.
I think there's two really important things with brisket is how you prepare it and how you cut it. If you slice it truly the wrong way, you could have a tough brisket and it has nothing to do with how you cooked it if you slice it incorrectly. So.
And maybe get a knife from your knife department.
You have a lot of nice stuff. A good slicing knife is definitely important.
Well, it looks like the categories are ribs, pulled pork, beans, and a dessert competition.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of fun.
Why not, right? We partnered with Sandy's Donuts to bring a dessert competition. I think the Pitmasters, you know, they're competing at a professional level with the ribs, chicken, pork, brisket every weekend. And so when we can add in beans or dessert, they get to show off their culinary skills, get to do something a little more fun, and it's fun for the judges too.
Sounds like I need an invite as a judge maybe next year.
I mean, we can maybe sneak you in this year too.
Perfect. That would be a good birthday.
Yeah.
And the awards people, I was checking out the awards because they're displayed in your store and they're actual grill grates, the awards.
Yeah. It started a tradition. Tom Malm was a past employee at Shields. He started that tradition with Paul Berg here in town. He's local. He makes the trophies for us. And so I continued the tradition. It's kind of a really unique trophy. In the barbecue world, trophies are the thing. You know what I mean? There's some really cool ones out there. And so I scour the curbs on, you know, cleanup week and find some grill grates. And we clean them up and we add the barbed wire and customize them.
That just makes things more fun, I think.
It is really fun. Knowing that it's something homemade and something local, too.
And there's a competition or two competitions for kids, right?
We have a kids' queue this year. We brought it back. We haven't had it for a couple years. And so two age categories. We have 6 to 11. They'll be cooking ground beef sliders. And 12 to 17 will be cooking sirloin steaks. And that is all sponsored by All Sauger Meats here in Fargo.
And there are going to be grilling and cooking demos. I know we mentioned that earlier, but maybe talk a little bit about that on Saturday.
Yes, yeah, Saturday, 11 to 4. We have, like, the guys from RecTech will be here. We'll have Traeger, Big Green Egg, a lot of our sponsors like North Harvest Bean Growers and North Dakota Soybean Council. They'll have different stuff at their booth. I think we have 26 vendors lined up, so.
And can the public sample the goods?
Absolutely, yes. So there's a couple different ways the public can come out. Friday night, from 5 to 7. We have the People's Choice Bean Competition, and that's totally free. So they can come out. There's 35 different flavors of beans. Try them all. Vote for your favorite. And then Saturday, 11 to 4, we have the free grilling samples. And then we also have on Saturday the pulled pork platter, and that's at 2 p.m. So that's a new time for anyone who's attended in the past.
Pulled pork platter sounds pretty good right now.
Yes.
Ashley, what's it like putting an event like this together? I mean, from scavenging the prizes to organizing all the vendors, I would imagine it's a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
It is so much fun. I mean, my passion for barbecue, my husband and I cook a lot at home, but my passion for barbecue has obviously increased immensely. And just the barbecue world has kind of taken me under their wing. And it's just a huge family atmosphere. And from the event perspective, we start planning, you know, it's over May 2nd. We start planning May 3rd for next year type of thing. And so it's really fun.
And how has this event evolved from the first barbecue championship to now?
I mean, I've only worked at Shields 7 years, so I wasn't there for the first one. But that started out with Jade Presents as Burgers, Blues, and Barbecue.
Ah.
And we were part of that, helping sponsor and bring that event to life. And then the next year, we purchased the naming rights of North Dakota Barbecue Championship from them. And we've been running the actual championship part of it ever since.
And where can folks find more information about this event?
Our Shields Home and Hardware Facebook page or at NDBBQ on Facebook would be the easiest.
We're talking with Ashley Waite of Shields Home and Hardware in Fargo today. We're talking about the upcoming North Dakota Barbecue Championship, and now we'll get into some of the offerings at your store, because the cooking, grilling section at Shields Home and Hardware on 13th and Fargo is vast.
We like to call it a little barbecue paradise, yeah, for sure.
I would call it that. I mean, I go in there and my eyes get big.
I mean, we've tried to expand. We've expanded our shop this year. We kind of rearranged to make it a little easier for customers to shop. And we have it organized by category. So we have griddles, we have gas, we have pellet, we have charcoal. As far as grills, we've got, you know, sauce seasonings, all the things.
And some of those grill brands.
Yeah, Weber, Napoleon for gas. We have Rectech is kind of new and upcoming on the smoking market is for smokers. We have the standard Traeger, Yoder, Big Green Egg, Blackstone, all of them.
A lot of the big names.
Yeah.
And we had Mark Sinnerin from Creative Kitchen last week, and we talked about having fun tools makes cooking more fun. You don't have to have the best or the most expensive, but when you have nice stuff, it really makes it fun.
And I think just having the courage to go out and try something new. Like, if you've never smoked meat before, why not try it? You know, if you haven't, you know, done a sous vide before, why not try? And so, I mean, trying to make cooking fun and just being experimental and not being too scared to try something.
And you offer cookware brands like Made In, and then some of the knife brands are pretty high end.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have everything from grills to sauces, like you were saying, to a lot of other tools.
Right, the kitchen cutlery. We also try to make sure that we have, you know, a price point. So if you're just getting into the market for a grill or for some kitchen cookware, we try to have, you know, a good, better, best variety and at different price points that people can buy.
Because some of those cast iron pans can be inexpensive and they can do a lot.
Absolutely, yes. I think it's also how you take care of your equipment. You know, the season for cast iron, making sure you season it before you use it, how you wash it, all different things like that.
And I noticed a vast arsenal of grilling tools.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, and wood chips and all of that.
Definitely. I would say if there's one thing you need in your kitchen, any kitchen, is a meat thermometer. It's the biggest, most important thing that you could have.
I would agree with that, especially with barbecue.
And then I would say a good knife set after that.
Good knives make a big difference.
Absolutely.
Now let's talk a little bit about the cafe you have in Shields Home and Hardware. It's busy quite often.
It's a hidden gem, for sure.
And Nephila soup is offered.
Wednesday for Nephila.
We need to make sure people know about that.
Yeah.
all of our soups are homemade sandwiches. We have cold sandwiches and paninis. Throughout the summertime, we try to do a couple different specials like Taco Tuesday, things like that. So,
is there a menu people can find online?
No, because it kind of just depends on what ingredients we have in the cafe at that point. We try to stay a little seasonal. We do have some standard soups. So like every Monday is chicken wild rice and zupa. Every Tuesday is chicken tortilla. Wednesday is nephila and jalapeno popper. Thursday is cheeseburger. And Friday we always do tomato.
So it is kind of a hidden gem.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a good lunch spot. They're only open from 8 to 2. They do serve breakfast and coffee in the morning, coffee all day, and then soup, salad, sandwiches for lunch.
Well, Ashley, anything else you'd like to add about your store or the barbecue championship? I know we haven't talked about the Wishick sausage folks showing
up. Yeah, the Wishick wagon. We're so excited. They haven't been to Fargo since, I think, Pride of Dakota last year. So this is the first time they've been at our store. And so we're excited. So we're having them Friday, May 1st at noon. They will start selling. They told me they're bringing between 6,000 and 7,000 pounds of sausage.
Wow.
And they plan to sell out within about 5 hours. So I would get there early. If you need to swing over, we're having food truck Friday as well. So if you need to come get sausage, stop on by the food trucks, grab lunch, and head back to work.
And that's the Stan Supermarket Wishick Sausage.
Correct. Yep.
Well, they'll be out in full force.
I mean, it's going to be a great day. Weather's looking good. We're really excited. And then that evening, like I said, we have kids' queue. We have dessert, ribs, and beans. And then Saturday is the full grill fest and competition.
Well, Ashley Waite with Shields Home and Hardware on 13th Avenue South in Fargo. It's been great having you in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's been another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. We'll talk to you next week.
Fargo Moorhead Opera presents Il Tabarro and other operatic works in collaboration with the FM Symphony at NDSU Festival Hall, Saturday, April 25th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, April 26th at 2 p.m. Details at fmopera.org.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, the host of Weekend Edition Sunday. The news doesn't stop to take a break on the weekend. Around the clock, NPR reporters and their support teams are working hard to connect you to voices and stories oceans away and here in the nation. As North Dakota's home for NPR, Prairie Public relies on the generous contributions of listeners like you to help pay for the reporting you count on, even on the supposed day of rest. So whether you're in Bismarck, Minot, Fargo, Grand Forks, and everywhere in between, it's important to stay informed. Become a sustaining member right now by going to prairiepublic.org. And I hope you'll catch me Sunday mornings from 7 till 9 a.m. Central for Weekend Edition on Prairie Public.
Hungarians are hungry for climate action. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Last Sunday, April 12th, Viktor Orban's 16-year grip on power as Prime Minister of Hungary came to an end when he lost in a stunning landslide defeat to challenger Peter Magyar.
Orban was seen as a corrupt authoritarian who controlled the media, judiciary, and state institutions. Magyar and his center-right Tisza party won a supermajority in parliament. So what, if anything, does that mean for the climate?
Orban had given only lip service to climate action, calling Hungary a climate champion under his leadership, but it was in response to polling that showed 95% of Hungarians wanted to see adaptation efforts. In practice, Orban was a staunch opponent of EU climate policies, calling them a utopian fantasy.
Magyar did not make climate a focus of his campaign, but his party did, calling for cooperation with the EU, possibly to unlock frozen funds intended for a green transition. The Tisza party pledged to end Hungary's dependence on Russian energy by 2035 and to double its share of renewables by 2040.
Tisza's manifesto vows that the Hungarian people have the right to clean air and water and that they will regulate and sanction industrial polluters, likely referring to the very controversial battery industry in the country.
While helping to facilitate a green transition, Chinese, South Korean, and Japanese-owned battery factories have been accused of polluting air, soils, and water with toxic discharges, while the Orban government looked the other way.
Severe droughts and heat waves are straining Hungary's water supplies, causing historic lows in the Danube and Tisa rivers. Magyar's party vowed to improve infrastructure, to increase groundwater storage, and to strengthen climate adaptation in agriculture.
Last Friday, the federal government announced emergency measures to increase water levels at Lake Powell on the Colorado River, the country's second largest reservoir.
The Bureau of Reclamation will release nearly 670,000 acre-feet of water from Flaming Gorge Reservoir in Utah and Wyoming, an amount that could serve about 1.5 million households.
In a statement, the Bureau said that the Colorado River storage system has shrunk to about 36% of its capacity due to long-term drought, very low snowpack, and record heat in March. The likely flow into Lake Powell is forecast to be less than 30% of average.
In addition, the Bureau will significantly reduce releases from Lake Powell to Lake Mead, which holds water for Arizona, Nevada, and California, to ensure that Glen Canyon Dam can continue to generate electricity for more than 5 million people.
In response to the crisis, the Upper Basin states of Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and New Mexico said they will immediately implement voluntary conservation and efficiency measures and strictly enforce water rights.
The seven states in the Colorado Basin have been unable to reach an agreement on how to cut back allocations in the long term, and negotiators have not met in person since January.
Last week, the Senate voted to remove a ban on mining near more than 1,000 pristine lakes in northern Minnesota.
It's a major blow to those who view the Boundary Waters Canoe Wilderness Area as fragile and worthy of protection, and it will likely lead to mining in 350 square miles of federal land within the watershed.
The wilderness area is in the Superior National Forest along the border with Canada and has thousands of lakes and streams, rugged cliffs, and sandy beaches carved by glaciers.
A federal study in 2022 showed that water pollution there could affect aquatic life, tourism, and harm Native American communities disproportionately.
The vote on the measure, which overturns the 20-year ban on the industry, was close, passing 50-49, and follows last month's approval by House Republicans. It now goes to the president for his expected signature.
A Chilean company, Twin Metals, has sought to mine for copper, cobalt, platinum, and nickel just south of the wilderness area. Its parent company was recently fined by regulators in Chile for failing to comply with water regulations.
And finally, the war in Iran might convince more people to buy electric vehicles, but with a growing number of models on the market, brands might need to offer up some snazzy features to sway customers. Say, perhaps an onboard commode?
It could happen. The luxury Chinese carmaker Seres was granted a patent for what it's calling an in-vehicle toilet.
The loo, which sits below the passenger seat, is voice-activated and slides in and out like a drawer, according to the BBC.
The car commode will have an exhaust fan to expel odors and a heating element to dry and evaporate waste, which collects in a tank that would need to be emptied manually.
The Chinese car market is so intensely competitive that other EV automakers are trying to woo customers by offering features like karaoke systems, refrigerators, and seats with massage functions.
Although Seres has not indicated that the toilets will be available soon, one can kind of see the appeal. Maybe you're stuck in traffic, miles from a rest stop, on a long drive, or even camping. But if it's your day to drive carpool and nature calls, that could get awkward.
That's it for this week in water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Franny, that's some crazy s***.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Starian Bank, determined to provide smart banking solutions with innovative checking accounts and personal banking tools that match your lifestyle. Starian, taking you farther. Learn more at starianbank.com.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. Central broadcast of Main Street, All Things Considered is next. There's a historically high number of immigrants in detention, and the number of people held in ICE facilities for more than a year has risen dramatically. NPR profiles an entire family held in detention for nearly a year. That story on All Things Considered beginning at 4 p.m. Central, right after Main Street. And at 8 p.m. Central tonight, it's Travel with Rick Steves. Get tips to overcome the anxiety of packing light for an overseas flight, explore the countryside of Sweden, and hear highlights from fellow travelers' adventures across Europe. That's Travel with Rick Steves tonight at 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain. And in baseball, the Minnesota Twins stopped their losing skid, continued the Mets' losing skid. They beat the Mets 5-3 last night and continue that series today in New York.
This is Decoder Datebook for April 22nd. Local organizations and clubs often invite distinguished guests to share information and provide programming. Bismarck's Rotary Club hosted such a guest at its April 22, 1936, noon lunch, when North Dakota's Department Commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Philo George Harrington, spoke on the Spanish-American War. Harrington served with the 4th Wisconsin Infantry Regiment, which spent the war in Alabama, and did not see any combat. Disease affected the unit, and several men died from illness. He later served overseas during World War I with the 116th Engineers and was discharged for disability in March of 1919. He described the events leading up to the war and called it humane, arguing that America intervened to free the Cubans from the misrule, inhumane treatment, and cruelty of the Spaniards. He stressed that conditions in Cuba were worse than reported in the press. Harrington told the gathering the war was the only one ever fought wholly by volunteers. While volunteers made up most of the forces, the United States still maintained a small regular army as it had in earlier wars, including the Civil War. He went on to describe the hardships faced by American troops and the toll of disease, drawing on his own experience. He said citizens had a duty to answer the nation's call in wartime and briefly addressed national defense and immigration laws. The meeting also welcomed Dr. F. C. Stuckey as a new member, named the May Program Committee, and set a goal of forming a 50-man chorus for a May gathering in Duluth, led by Professor John Howard. Born in Wisconsin, Harrington married Catherine Delzer in Bismarck on September 28, 1920. He operated a barbershop there from 1920 until retiring in 1955. He later lived in Phoenix, Arizona, where he died on April 12, 1962, at a Veterans Administration hospital. He was buried in Bismarck. Philo Harrington's program to the Rotarians is just one example of a local dignitary sharing his experiences with a community organization, with people of similar stature continuing the tradition in communities and to organizations across North Dakota. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Daniel Sauerwein. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota. Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
After a long absence from Capitol Hill, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been questioned in multiple congressional hearings. What we learned tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Planned Parenthood, offering health education for teens and workshops for parents on topics including health, relationships, and growing up. More at ppncs.org.
And that's a wrap for this Wednesday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Here's what's ahead for tomorrow. Global conflict is shaking oil markets, but don't expect a drilling boom in North Dakota. In a closer look with the Monitor reporter, Jacob Orlich breaks down what it means for the region's energy future. And in Tech with Peck, George Peck takes us from vinyl to streaming, explaining what really separates Wave, MP3, and what you're actually hearing when you press play. That's all ahead tomorrow on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.